Yes, this is Harbhajan Singh, and I come to Mother's Joint to tell you that sometimes Mother's Joint use profanity. Mothers have very naughty mouth. Sometimes he say things like "ding it," or maybe he say "yellow belly sapsucker," or maybe he say "doo-loo-loo-loo." Sometimes he say "motherfucker," other times he say "penis." I don't know.
Asshole, get out of here. Give me that phone, dickhead. Man, I'm trying to find somebody to do the disclaimer and to do it the right way. No, get your ass out of here. This idiot. Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad you're here, at least. Sit down. We gotta get that other guy out of here. Don't sit there looking stupid. Jerk. I'm glad you're here, though. Here, sit down in this chair. It's been up. I smacked the garbage man this morning with it. Guy's dumping garbage all over the sidewalk, you know. Come on. But the chair's solid. You can sit in it. I got my cup of coffee here. I'm ready to go. You ready to talk? No, you can't have a cup of coffee, jerk. I spend enough money on this show for starships and whatnot. Be buying you a cup of coffee. Let me go over what I'm going to be talking about this week. I got my top 10 things that in wrestling to me don't make sense. I got emails. I'm only going to be going over one this week because it's kind of a long-winded deal. I'm playing armchair quarterback again, and I kind of hate doing that shit because, you know, yeah, anyways. I got my gripe of the week. I'll have my definition of heroism at the end of the show. And this is, you know, I've saved a lady from drowning before, an old grandma, and I saved her ass from the ocean. But what I'm going to talk about at the end of the show is way more awesome. It's something really big. I caught a thief red-handed. Welcome to Modest Joint. This is Michael Modest, and wrestling is hardcore, which brings me to my gripe of the week. My silly gripe is these hardcore promotions that are only, you know, and I'm not generalizing, you know, not all of them are this way, but most of them are loosely based on professional wrestling. You might see a Stunner or a Triple Lindy, but for the most part, you're just going to, you know, see light bulbs. You're going to see guys swinging drywall and tuna cans and, you know, sardines at each other, bananas, whatever, you know, what have you. I'm kind of a wrestling purist. I like my wrestling kind of dry, I guess. I don't know. Stiff in there, you know, just good solid wrestling, you know. But these promotions, they all call themselves like extreme this or hardcore that. And it's like, guys, get out the thesaurus. You know, I took a little time and I come up with some names. And anybody, you're welcome to take these names. If you think it sounds really good and you think it describes your promotion, take the name. Here's a couple of the names. Slaughterhouse Pro Wrestling. Or how about this one? I'll box cutter off your scalp Pro Wrestling. Or how about, our wrestlers will commit suicide by diving off a shit they shouldn't be diving off of wrestling. Or what about, I light myself on fire for $50 wrestling. Or even like, no kitchen sinks wrestling. I think that would adequately describe some of the product out there. So that's my gripe. Now, in 2 weeks, we're going to have Frank Murdoch on the show. Now, Frank is a longtime friend of mine. He's my brother in every way possible. And Frank was trained originally by Buzz Sawyer. And so he's going to have some stories about Buzz and traveling with Manny Fernandez. And that'll be in 2 weeks. Next week, though, right here on Modest Joint, make sure you tune in. My producer, Tommy Fierro, will be on the show. And Tommy, I got a cup of coffee for you, brother. And you know, you can check out the Starship, whatever. Hey, brother, mi casa su casa. You know what I'm saying? So I'm looking forward to having Tommy over here at Modest Joint. And again, at great personal expense, I'm the one flying him out here, you know. And Tommy held out for a first-class ticket and 3 cups of coffee. I've been listening to a lot of shows on Who's Slamming Who. I always got to plug Sheiky's show. I love it. Ace Darling's show was really good this last week. Judas Young, Shannon Moore were talking about indies and stuff, man, and I want to kind of continue along those lines. One of the things I wanted to add, like my own 2 cents, is that the bad starts from the bottom and works up, you know, all the way to the top. Everyone thinks because wrestling is predetermined or whatever they think about it, they think it's a work or whatever, they think anybody can do it. But nothing could be further from the truth. When I started training in pro wrestling, that's when I realized it was real. That's when I realized it was a shoot. Even though the finishes are predetermined usually. But the bad starts from the bottom. You start from the top. Promoter, you know, the promoter, the boss, the owner, the indie promoter, or whatever. He doesn't have posters, or maybe he has shabby posters, crappy looking posters. Maybe they got flyers, maybe they don't. They don't know how to create a buzz in their own little small town. You know, no radio, no TV. They're trying to make all their money from tickets. They don't know how to do merchandise. They don't know there's a psychology behind merchandising and marketing. There's no concessions, you know. Man, I say give away those VIP front row, couple of front row, you know, seats. Give them all away to sponsors and shit like that and put an expensive price tag on them, $50, so that the sponsors come and they look and they go, wow, fuck, they sold out the first three rows. That's $50 a pop. Maybe you'll get a sponsor and maybe you'll be able to make a little money. Got to hustle. The setup, you know, there's no barriers or the ring looks like shit. The fans are spread all over the freaking building that holds 1,000. Meanwhile, they got a pretty decent house at 350, but it doesn't look like 350, which is, you know, believe me, 350 is pretty good for an indie house lately. The booking, they don't know how to build storyline. They don't know how to build a fan base. Can't draw 100 in their own town, so they take the show on the fucking road. I don't get it. The announcer's trying to get himself over, telling little anecdotes or jokes, announcing that he's doing the bar mitzvah down the street next week, or announcing that he does weddings, and, you know, the play-by-play guys making jokes on, you know, over the matches and calling shit like, you know, oh my God, here comes Dirk the Daring with the sledgehammer. Referee's back's turned. You know, and they're announcing shit like that, you know, live at the show. The boys with no boots, no wrestling gear. Everybody wants to be a hip-hop baggy pants wrestler, you know. The guys don't hustle. One of my students, Vito, you know, when Misawa came in for the Pro Wrestling Iron Show, I told Vito, I said, you know, it's a shame, man. My 80-year-old grandma sold more tickets for that show than any of the boys, any of them. The boys all sold, you know, like two or three tickets. And I'm like, you know, all you good-looking guys that think everybody wants to come see you, and all that's all you could draw. A couple people. Wow. You know, so it's like, man, hustle. Get out there. And don't give up on yourself too quick. You know, Bison was going to quit after I trained him for 3 years. Bison was like, oh, I should quit. I haven't made it in the business yet. And I took that as a personal fucking insult. Here I was. I had been going a lot longer than that. And, still hadn't really made a big impact or splash in the business. So it's like, then geographical indie workers, they want to move around from place to place and they think somehow that's going to improve their career, not realizing that every place they go, they got to start over again. The promoter's not just going to start giving you the same push that the guy you've been faithful to or loyal to for the last couple of years is going to push you. You know, shit like that. I stayed with APW for a long time. The reason why is because Roland was shoving me down everybody's fucking throat. Built a name for myself, you know. Let me get on with emails. Shelly asked me, what would I do to impact TNA? Well, Shelly, there's a lot of shit I would do. Would have, could have, should have, or, you know. But the very first thing I would do is get rid of that fucking quadruple... what is it, hexagon? I think it's like a hexagon. I think it's like six sides, eight sides. I don't know. But I get rid of that fucking ring. That ring drives me crazy. If you want to change the product, put in different ingredients. Don't change the packaging. You know, there's nothing wrong with a four-sided ring. If it's not broken, don't fix it. That's the first thing I would do. The second thing, I would use a lot more split screen, doing plugs and merchandising constantly on a ticker at the bottom or something like that so that I could show more wrestling during the programming. The matches are spotty and they're too rushed because the guys only have 3 minutes and they're all trying to get over. So I would just let the guys go 10, 15 minutes, whatever they, you know, however long they go, and then just clip it. just show clips of the matches, man. If that's all you want is nonstop action, just show clips of the match and then advertise the finish on the fucking online. You know, the finish is on the website. Or the match in its entirety is on the website. I would hire Conan to do a lucha promotion out of California. I mean, you got a state with the income like an economy of a small country, and we've got an illegal alien problem that makes national headlines. And I'm not sure why there's not more lucha promotions in California. Pro Wrestling Revolution is doing a great job. They're selling out. It's just an indie, but they're doing really, really well. That's another thing I would do. The jobber formula, I'd return to that. Any college professor will tell you that people retain very little of what they hear or see, and it's a small percentage. And, but it's easy when you're watching a match and it's, you know, like, Bobby Bryant and his opponent, weighing 340 pounds, The Undertaker. You know, there's a huge difference. And you know who to concentrate on. You know who to watch. And it just makes it easier. And Johnny No Name continues to be Johnny No Name. And I also think that it'd be a good way to knock some guys down a notch. Recognize. Limited exposure to the champ. You know, Ace Darling brought up a point about the belts. If I had the belts thing, I would do a super heavyweight, a heavyweight, a lightweight, and a tag. There's no need for cruiserweight tags because a mixed match team could be beat by, you know, like a light and heavy guy could definitely be beat by a cruiserweight team. And then a light and heavy guy could definitely beat a heavyweight team. So there's no reason for a cruiser tag belt. And I would have a limited exposure to the champions on television. The champions would mainly be doing interviews, but not 15-minute jaw-jacking sessions. You know, it would just be like an interview, maybe a video clip of some things he's been doing or whatever. Like, you know, show him traveling, driving in a nice car, taking a vacation, whatever it is champions do. To kind of build the mystique of that belt again. Why does that belt mean something? Well, it means something because the champion doesn't have to be a fucking TV. Always wrestling. A lot of times the champion's out doing press conferences or whatever. Build that motherfucker. Make him look like somebody. Instead of just, you know, he's just stuck inside of an arena, always doing promos and stuff with people. And I would have the champion make a few house show appearances, but less TV appearances, you know, so that you would build up your house show attendance. And I would also take the belts more seriously and show a top contendership and really push that idea. You know, hey, you know, this week on TNA, here's your top contenders for Jeff Jarrett's heavyweight title or for Sting's heavyweight title. And then go through the guys, go through the list and actually have somebody take time to pay attention to what, you know, how people are crawling up that list. You know, those are the things that made pro wrestling really important, is you had number one, you know, contender, but now it's like, it just seems to go from the number one contender to the champ, and the rest of it's just kind of a merble gerbil of whatever the fuck. And the fans can't really keep track of statistics or who's where. And fans like that, man. They, you know, baseball and football, you know, fans like keeping track of statistics and knowing someone's history and trying to root for somebody that's starting off at 10th place and maybe it's your favorite guy and now you get to keep track of his progress. So that's another thing I would do. And, you know, I think I'm kind of burnt out on that whole subject because it's all just, you know, what ifs. So we're gonna kind of end with that, man. But I told you it was kind of a long-winded email. One more thing I'm going to say about it, and then I'm going to quit. You know, you look at WCW and the great job they did with Bill Goldberg. Goldberg was hidden on TV. Goldberg is not a fantastic wrestler. In fact, he was a participant in the most blasphemous professional wrestling match I've ever seen in my life. And that was a tag match that he had some years ago in Japan, like, I don't know, 5 years ago or something like that. And they flew him in. It was a big deal. They paid him big bucks. And it was just a brutal match, man. I can't remember who the other big dude was that was in there, but they kind of didn't, you know, put each other over at all. And it was just, they didn't work well together. It was kind of clumsy. It wasn't good. But I'll tell you what, Bill Goldberg is a hell of a fucking entertainer. great personality, awesome charisma, and what they did was they took him on his strengths, and that's all they showed. His matches were, 10-second, 15-second, squashes on TV against pretty decent workers, and then when you'd finally get to see him in a pay-per-view, even those were pretty short. And, they did a really good job, really putting over someone's strengths and hiding weaknesses, and I think that's super important. All right, now let's get on with the ghost story, because like I said, it is my Halloween show, so this is a ghost story. I don't know if it's a ghost story or more of like a dream, but here it is. All right, so when I was a kid, now as God is my witness, this is the way I remember it, so don't make fun of me here. My parents were, from Berkeley area. I was born in Berkeley. They were kind of hippies. So maybe I was crawling around the floor and I got a bad hit of acid or something. But this is the way I remember it. When I was a kid, I remember being in my crib and staring out at the crib, and there was this little goat man, and he was trying to reach in and grab at me. So while this was happening, there was these two little kids, and they were playing on the I had a rocking chair and a rocking horse. These two little boys were playing on the thing, but they weren't smiling. They looked dead. They were pale and cold looking, just kind of rocking there. And this little goat dude's reaching in at me, and he's burnt, like he's got charred fingers and shit. He's reaching in, and that was about the end of the dream. I don't remember anything else. That was all of it. So years later, I'm 14 years old, and it's Christmas, and we're setting up the Christmas tree. And my mom pulls out this real tacky ornament, and it was a reindeer. And it was designed real gaudy, like that Middle Eastern look with too many fucking little gold things on it and swirls and shit. It just looked like crap, but it was old. And she was hanging it on the tree, and I had mentioned that it gave me the creeps, because it reminded me of this dream about a goat man I had when I was a kid. And my sister looks at me white as a ghost, pale, and she says, "I had the same dream. I had a dream about a goat man." So my mom's like, "Wow, this is really bizarre." My mom says, "Come in here," and she pulls my sister into the other room. My sister tells my mom of her dream. They come back in. I share my dream. The dreams were identical. The two little boys, the goat man. The only difference was in my sister's dream, I was laying on a bed, and the little goat man kept coming up like he was going to touch me. But he never did in her dreams. So anyways, that's my scary ghost story for my Halloween edition. And, believe it or not, it's the way I remember it. I'm going to move on to I forgot to tell you, I'm going to add a new little segment, and it's probably going to be the only week I'm going to do it, but I like doing that, adding little segments and throwing them out. I'm going to do my DVD movie review real quick. Raiders of the Lost Ark. What the fuck is it with movies like that? Every time there's like a gold involved in any fucking movie, the ending to the film is always the same. They're in a temple, a cave, a spaceship, whatever the fuck it is. There's some kind of gold or treasure, something they're trying to get. The entire spaceship or planet or whatever the fuck starts crumbling. The temple starts crumbling, and everybody gets out except for one asshole that has to reach back and try to grab the gold coin or one last diamond, and he's the one that gets trapped and killed. So that's Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's the same fucking movie as The Mummy. It's the same movie as every other Raiders of the Lost Ark. I thought it was terrible. Save yourself $4. Don't go rent it. Wait for it to come out on TV. Plus, it's PG. I don't believe in seeing PG movies. Rated R, baby. I can see PG and PG-13 shit on television. All right, let's move on to my top 10. Top 10 things in wrestling that don't make no sense to me. Number 10, if you're big and you have the it factor, you can make a lot of money in this wrestling business even if you can't wrestle. Number 9, the it factor. I don't understand this. Is it really a factor? Like, is it scientific? Or is it just an opinion and bullshit, Hollywood jargon, for people in power to make a decision or not? I mean, let's face it, you know, guys like Dean Malenko didn't have a whole shitload of the it factor. You know, people bought Dean because they knew he could fucking work. Billy, okay, this is number 8, things I don't understand in wrestling. Billy and Chuck, RoboCop, Dusty Rhodes' gorilla, Papa Shango hypnotizing the warrior, reinventing brother love, why? Sting with midgets swimming up to his boat and attaching explosive devices, and the midgets are disguised as sharks, by the way, with little fins on their backs, and the cameraman, for some reason, didn't even warn Sting, so I don't understand shit like that. Number 7, vignettes that preview dastardly deeds, but the face is oblivious. The cameraman or his wrestling fans don't bother to tell him, hey, man, you know, your tag partner for the last 3 or 4 weeks on TV has looked like he's pretty upset at you. I'm thinking on the pay-per-view there might be a turn coming. And the other babyface is just like, oh, do-do-do-do-do. I don't understand that shit. Don't preview the dastardly deed. Don't show the guy putting the sledgehammer under the fucking ring so that everybody can be, like, waiting in anticipation. Just blows it. Number 6 thing I don't understand about the wrestling business is how 18-year-old zit-faced computer geeks became so over in this business, the writers and such. When did the wrestlers lose all control of this business? Number 5 thing I don't understand, why get training from a jabroni? I mean, if you go to a wrestling school and you see that this jackass hasn't been anywhere, and you see that, you know, he's got no set curriculum and he's not really training you in a good style, I mean, why would you go to a school like that? And yet people do. I mean, some of the indie workers I see out there, I just go, wow, who trained you? Joe Smith or Schmitty, the fucking mechanic down the road? Number 4 thing I don't understand about professional wrestling, why leg drops don't hurt if you make contact, but if you miss, they hurt your ass. I don't get it. Leg drops always hurt. That's why I don't fucking do them. They jar your spine and tweak your fucking back. And I could never understand. Donovan would go up and he'd try for the leg drop off the top rope. Dude would move, and it was always like missed. And I could never understand. Oh, why the fuck would you do that? It hurts. The number 3 thing I don't understand about professional wrestling, if you punch a guy 5 times, then shoot him to the fucking ropes, shouldn't he fall down? I don't understand the punching, the continual punching. I use chops, forearms. I'm physical in the ring. It's just the way I do it. You know, I don't understand, like, the need to punch so much in this business. I mean, you know, some is okay, but Jesus Christ, especially when you're getting ready to whip a guy to the ropes. Number 2 thing I don't understand about the wrestling business, stomping on punches. I don't understand that. You know, that's, again, why I use forearms and shit. You hear it. I don't have to stomp. Plus, punches are illegal, and I don't want to be disqualified by the referee. You know what I'm saying? And the number 1 thing I don't understand about professional wrestling is why go for the stack while you're in a headlock on the mat. You know, I've always seen it in the wrestling business. You know, a guy will be in the headlock on the mat, usually a heel, and he'll grab the babyface by the tights and roll him over, 1, 2, and then they kick back with the babyface still holding the headlock. And I've never seen a pin scored this way, so I'm not sure who came up with the bright idea that it was the thing to try. Now, I, for one, have won that way because in my wrestling technique, I try to look at things and look at them from a different angle. I look at, you know, well, what makes sense to me? So when I was in Japan, I wanted to get that move over so that it meant something when everybody else was doing it. I wrestled a guy named Ricky Momote. He was an older guy, but, you know, still physical, wasn't a comedy wrestler. And we did some really good stuff. You know, he had the headlock the whole match, and we fought back and forth, but he kept coming back to that headlock. At the end of the match, I went for his own finisher, which was a belly-to-back suplex. Imagine a belly-to-back suplex being a finisher. And he was going for his finisher. I countered and pulled a switch on him. I went for his belly-to-back suplex. He kicked, came down, threw me over in a head and arm throw, and ended up with that headlock again. And this time I rolled him over, grabbed the tights, and I bridged and really stacked him deep and got the 3 count. And the fans really popped. The finish got really over. And it's like, You know, I don't understand why you would continually go for something that just doesn't work. You know, make it work, man. Take something old and make it new. Now my definition of heroism, you can check it out on MySpace. I actually have the footage of it. I was a hero. It was a Super Diablo match. It's on there. It's a strap match. And you can also check it out on YouTube. Type in Michael Modest versus Super Diablo strap match. And you could check out what happens is I stop a thief, man, right in the act. What happened was I was going for the strap like the second or third time after I had hit Diablo with it a whole bunch of times. I'm going for the strap, and this little black kid that's sitting at the ringside, he gets in his eye, you know, his head that he's going to save Super Diablo. Right, so he grabs the damn strap from me, the belt, and he's got this horrified look, and he's shaking his head no. Kid's like 8, 9 years old, and I said, "Give me that belt, you little bastard! I'm gonna smack you with it." And the kid said no, and so I got out of the ring. He started running. You don't try to run from Mike Modest, you little thief. I chased his little ass down. I grabbed that belt. He fell to his back. He tried to go to that UFC defensive fighting style and was kicking at me and shit. I got that belt from him, and then I wrestled away from security. I don't let thieves interrupt my matches, man. So that's my definition of heroism. Me, Michael Modest. Hey, email me at michael.modest@gmail.com. I'm going to Springfield, Oregon on November 1st, so hopefully I'll see you there. You've been kicking it with me at Mike Modest's pad. This is Michael Modest, and I'm telling it like it is. Wrestling is hardcore. Peace.